on this edition of Audio Berkman.
The average employee could go home at night and do their podcast or have a blog and have an audience and be a somebody, but then go back to work and be treated like a nobody. People just increasingly aren't into that anymore. They want to have a voice at work.
Tracy Fenton of World Blue on Organizational Democracy and the Future of Work. I'm Erica George, staff assistant at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School. World Blue writes, organizational democracy is freedom within a business framework. It is both an organizational strategy for companies and a leadership style. It is achieved when a company uses the principles of democracy to design the way it operates daily, cultivating a company that enhances employee potential, thereby achieving its business goals and positively impacting the community. To take a closer look at these and other issues, we'll hear from Tracy Fenton speaking at a Berkman luncheon on June 13, 2006. Audio Berkman is brought to you by the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School, on the web at cyber.law.harvard.edu.
I've been looking forward to this time together and the combination of ideas that we get to explore. Thank you, David, for facilitating this invitation and the Berkman Center for having me. I think there's a real correlation between the work World Blue is doing and the democratization of the workplace and what Berkman's doing. So I'm really looking forward to our discussion that will follow some ideas that I'd like to share with you today about the changing workplace and what's happening. So to begin with, imagine with me that those words are actually white and not yellow. Now, imagine with me getting up in the morning and being excited to go to work. And you're excited to go to work because you don't really have a boss. In fact, you're your own boss. And you have a say in the decisions that matter to you. And imagine getting to work with really talented people where together you get to decide what projects you want to work on, what you don't want to work on. Imagine working in a place where you have access to the financial health of the organization. You know on a day-to-day basis how well it's performing and what you can do to actually influence that. How many of you would be interested in working in this kind of a work environment? Anybody here? You feel valued? And yeah, I thought so. Well, what I'm describing is not utopian and not that far-fetched. I'm actually describing the GE Durham plant in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, that operates using organizational democracy. They have about 150 employees and one plant manager. And what they do is they actually do rocket science. They make the jet engines that fly Air Force One and that fly on most commercial aircrafts. And you would think something like building jet engines would require a very command and control oriented workplace, but that's not how GE Durham is. They use organizational democracy, and their plant manager, hi, Chuck Williams, told me recently that all future plants that GE will be building will operate using a democratic management style. So what exactly is organizational democracy? Well, in the most simple form, it is democratic principles applied to a business context. Another way of looking at it is it's an approach to doing business. Instead of a control-based approach to business, when you have a problem, you say, all right, how can we take a democratic or participatory or inclusive approach to how we solve the problems? And organizational democracy is not something that myself or my company that we invented. It's actually a concept that's been floating around in various permutations for a while now. And there have been many management thought leaders who have talked about different dimensions of organizational democracy. We have Peter Drucker, who says, you know, the CEO is not omnipotent. We have Margaret Wheatley, who talks about the idea of living systems within organizations rather than mechanistic or control-oriented systems. There's Ricardo Semler, who talks about we have to treat workers like adults, CEO of Semco. We have Jared Fatlow from Shell, who talks about removing tyrannical hierarchy. Marvin Bauer of McKinsey, who's saying command and control is really now irrelevant. So where does that leave us? That really leaves us with organizational democracy. And I believe it's an idea that whose time has come, that we're finally now in a place where more and more organizations can start to embrace organizational democracy, where it's not the exception to the rule, but can actually become the norm. And we'll explore some of those reasons why in a moment. So organizational democracy isn't about politics applied in a business context. It's actually about an organizational system. It's not about everybody sitting around and voting on everything, but it is about people having a voice. It's not about having fewer leaders in an organization, it's about actually having more leaders within an organization. It's not an American-only idea. The principles of freedom are universal. It's not about going slow. People always think, oh, does that mean you don't get any work done? But no, it's knowing when to go slow so that you can then go fast, tortoise and hare. And it's not about time, it's about the right timing and when to use it. So basically, it's about organizations that operate on freedom, not fear. And when you come from a standpoint of fear, what do? You create systems that are based on control. But when you come from a standpoint of freedom and releasing human potential, you create environments that are based on freedom. So traditionally what we've seen in business are command and control structures that are characterized by things like paternalism, parent-child relationships. Maybe some of you have experienced this in different work environments. I know I have. Whereas democratic organizations are characterized more by peer-to-peer relationships. Command and control employees are order takers. In a democratic company, they're decision makers. Command and control is about management or micromanagement. In organizational democracy, you have leadership. You don't try to manage people, you lead. Command and control is an ego-driven type of model, whereas a democratic environment is more based on what Jim Collins calls in his book, Good to Great, the balance of humility and fierce resolve. A command and control company is more of a secret society where few people have access to the information. Democratic companies are transparent. And of course, command and control usually is characterized by hierarchy, lots of hierarchy, bureaucracy, whereas a democratic organization is characterized more by fluid networks, more of a lattice type of structure. And there are many examples of Yes.
You said you were willing to be involved.
Sure. Well, only if it's a really good question.
I hope so, but it bugs me about it, the in American business today, the senior management gets paid disproportionately more than junior management and worker bees. And one of the ways historically they've maintained that is by this hierarchy thing where everybody above is sort of a secret society to those who are below because the people who are above are afraid that the people below will realize that they're just as smart as them, and so they work to maintain that stack of glass ceilings. GE is no exception to the problem of income asymmetry, where the management gets paid way hugely more than they're worth. Shell is another one. The senior management is just, you know, like, whatever, $100,000 an hour kind of thing. So how does the idea that there's this income gap that's getting greater over time fit with your idea of organizational democracy, which you say is now its time has come and it's growing over time?
Sure.
I'm skeptical.
Right. Well, I mean, that's a great point, and people are really rebelling against that. People are saying this huge gap is no longer appropriate, and that's where you see actually with like Whole Foods, they have a policy where the lowest paid worker and the highest paid worker, I think it's something like, I would need to double check this for you, but it's something like it can't be more than eight times. The highest paid worker can't be paid more than eight times the lowest paid worker. So there are one of the characteristics of a democratic organization is fairness. And so
it doesn't obtain at GE, and
that was what I was talking about was the GE Durham plant in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina. So they do operate that way. So there's sort of this microcosm of democracy within a command and control behemoth. Yes. So really there are democratic companies all around us, like Southwest Airlines and Whole Foods, W.L. Gore, which is a $2 billion company that makes things like Gore-Tex. Great Harvest Bread Company has 230 freedom franchises all over the U.S. The Container Store, SAS, Pandora. Anybody listen to Pandora online? Yeah, they're great, huh? Just talking with their CEO the other day. They seem to be a democratic company. So, in short, the formula, if you will, is a democratic design of an organization coupled with a freedom-centered approach to leadership is going to give you a democratic organization. And as David talked about, just this last fall, we had a conference, the world's first conference on organizational democracy, and brought together CEOs of democratic companies, authors, thought leaders, to talk about, you know, is this the future of work? Why is it the future of work? So why should anybody care about organizational democracy? I mean, you could just say, great, Tracy, really nice idea, loving it. Or give me some more reasons why anyone should care. Well, I think there are three reasons. First one is context, the shifting business context. Second one is the bottom line impact, cash. And the third is change. For those people who think about the role of business doing good in the world, there's a real connection here. So let's start with context, the shifting business context that's happening. Shift happens, we all know it. And what's causing this shift, we don't need to say it here, technology is really having a huge impact in changing the way that workers expect to engage at work. I mean, think about it. The average employee could go home at night and do their podcast or have a blog and have an audience and be a somebody, but then go back to work and be treated like a nobody. And people just, you know, increasingly aren't into that anymore. They want to have a voice at work. And so technology and the internet is really changing our expectations for how we want to engage. Enron backlash, to your point that you brought up of this disparity. I mean, people are tired of greedy business. They're tired of this huge gap in salaries. They want accountability. They want more transparency. So we're seeing new laws and things being created as a result of that. Another thing shifting the business landscape is we can't deny the fact that two-thirds of the world, according to Freedom House, two-thirds of the world is now living in democracy. Political democracy. And so people who were not empowered before to have a voice are now empowered. And you can expect that they're going to bring that mindset to the way that they think about their work and their life beyond just the voting booth. Generation X and Y, as a borderline Gen X and Gen Yer, and many of you are Gen Xers and Gen Yers in the crowd today, you know, we have a different expectation for how we want to work. And I know my first job out of college was for a Fortune 500 company, and I was so excited. I showed up that first day ready to go. I had held every leadership post you could have at my very small liberal arts school and was ready to just charge ahead into the corporate world, and got there that first day and immediately saw that I was not going to have much of a voice there at work. No one really cared what I had to say, actually, at all. And I was told what to do and to shut up and do it. And that was just not jiving with me. And I saw that they were going to use about 1% of my capacity. And so I ended up resigning from that job 4 months later, sort of Jerry Maguire style. And it was funny because my boss said to me, he says, you know, I knew you were too smart to let yourself be treated this way for very long, which was the nicest thing he'd ever said to me. So it's sort of our expectations are very different for work. And finally, there's a search for meaning. Patricia Aberdeen, in her book Megatrends 2010, talks about the fact that the number one megatrend in the U.S. and Europe right now is actually spirituality. So there's a real calling. People want a sense of purpose. They want their work to be an expression of their identity and to be an expression of meaning for them. So I think what's happened is we were in the industrial age, and when the dot-com bubble burst, I think what started bursting also was this industrial age mentality. We went into the information age, but the information age, I think, was a bridge. It was a bridge to take people from this industrial age, mechanistic, command and control mindset into the democratic age that we're now entering, I believe, which is a time of engagement, of networks, of empowerment of individuals in a way that we've never seen before. And this really is the new context for doing business. The second reason why anyone should care is the bottom line impact of organizational democracy. I'd like to tell you a short story about a company called Semco in São Paulo, Brazil. Has anyone ever heard of Semco? They are a manufacturing company, and they were founded in 1959 by Antonio Semler. And Antonio set it up. I mean, it's Brazil. It's 1959. Command and control, you know, hierarchical company. And about 1980, he was ready to retire. He was done running his business and decided to turn over the business to his 21-year-old son, Ricardo Semler. So Ricardo Semler, being the hotshot 21-year-old that he was, started raring ahead with Semco. Now, Semco was not in a good position at this point. They were sort of on the verge of bankruptcy. Dad was tired, turned it over to the son to help change it. But Ricardo Semler continued to run it in the same command and control, micromanaging way until at age 25, he actually collapsed. And he went to the doctor, and the doctor said, "You are the most stressed out 25-year-old I've ever seen in my life. You simply cannot continue to run your business and your life this way. You need to radically make a shift." So he went back to Semco and started thinking, you know, why do we make people ask to go to the bathroom here? I mean, these people are parents. They vote for president and the president of our country, and we're asking them to, you know, to ask permission for when to go to the bathroom. And he started talking with the employees there at SEMCO, and he found that they weren't very happy there at all. And in fact, they would rather be anywhere but SEMCO, but they needed a job, so they were just hanging on by a thread. So they started to go through some major changes, and what he then realized was he wanted to shift SEMCO from working in a command and control way to a democratic model. So what they did was, before, they only had 100 employees, and they had 12 layers of hierarchy. I mean, come on. They now have 1,300 employees, and everything is organized into three concentric circles. They used to be a closed, you know, secret society. Nobody knew what, you know, how much anybody made and what was going on in the financial situation. And now they practice something called open book management. The employees did not have a say in decisions that mattered to them, but now they do have a say. There was job stagnation. You had one job and you stayed in it. Now there's job rotation. People work on teams. They actually get to pick the jobs that they want to do. Before, your boss was by default. We all know this. You get to work and there's your boss. But at SEMCO, they actually vote and choose their boss now. And before, they were told what you're paid. You sign up for your job, you're told what your salary is. Now at SEMCO, they're offered 11 different ways to choose to be paid. And they actually, some of them get to set their own salaries. So what was the result? Well,
yes.
I know, it's radical.
Could you say a little more about what it means to choose how
Yeah. Yeah.
You can be a millionaire.
Sure, why not? Right. Well, actually, Ricardo Semler has written three Harvard Business Review articles, and in one of them, called Managing Without Managers, he outlines those 11 ways that that you can be paid, and you can actually get those on our website too if you want. But yeah, they offer a combination of, you know, salary, you could do royalties if you come up with a new idea, you can do profit sharing, I can't even remember, but there's 11 different ways that they do it.
But in other words, there's a structure, like you're not going to make more than a certain amount at a certain level, but you can choose how to receive the compensation.
Well, my understanding is, with some of the employees, they also have the opportunity to choose how much they want to get paid. But it works, it's not, you can't go in and say, it's almost like you're bidding for your job, and you can't go in and say, I want to be paid $1 million,
right,
so pay me. You know, it's like, if you want to be paid $1 million, but someone else can do the job just as well as you can, but for $80,000, you know? So there's, what happens is there's actually a tremendous discipline that evolves from that. And if you're saying, I'm worth $100,000 for this job, you sure as well better prove it. And that's what happens there at SEMCO, is it creates this positive peer pressure that holds people to a very high standard. And if you don't follow through, and if you don't deliver the goods, you're gone, because you didn't deliver the goods. So it's a really, within freedom, there's a tremendous sense of discipline that exists. So at SEMCO, within just 1 year of making this transition, they were on the verge of bankruptcy. Their sales doubled. They had a 35% increase in profitability. They had 8 new products launched. They started to diversify their product line before they had been stalled in R&D for 2 years. And their inventories fell from 146 to 36 days, which all of this translates to the bottom line. SEMCO went from being, like I said, on the verge of bankruptcy to now being a $212 million in revenue company. They're in manufacturing, they're in IT now, and they do real estate. And they're sort of a poster child of organizational democracy. Ricardo Semler is not 25 years old anymore, but he has gone on to write two best-selling books. One is called Maverick, and the other is the 7-Day Weekend one, just came out, I think, in the last 3 years, Changing the Way Work Works. And I really recommend both of these books if you're interested in these kinds of ideas. So why did shifting SEMCO from a command and control model to a democratic model benefit the bottom line? Well, I think it's very simple. When people start to have a voice, and they start to get to have a sense of ownership, they start to engage. And that engagement leads to greater levels of productivity, greater levels of efficiency, problem solving, and that's going to translate to making more money. Now, does anybody want to venture a guess? Does anybody want to venture a guess of how engaged, all right, let me say it this way, what percentage of the U.S. workforce is disengaged at work? In large American companies, Gallup does a poll. What percentage of the U.S. workforce is disengaged at work?
About 75.
75%?
85.
95. Very, very optimistic audience. It's actually 73%. 40% of the U.S. workforce is not engaged at work.
Let me choose my prize.
Yes, exactly. That's what, any brownie cookie, right? So I think this is scary. I mean, I don't know if anybody else feels this way, but I think this is sort of scary. In fact, 5 years ago, this number was 54%. So to me, it's interesting to notice we've gone from the industrial age through the information age to the democratic age, and that level of disengagement is going up, you know, to see that correlation
Bush
there.
Administration.
Yeah. So, and this is not just a U.S. problem, although this is costing the U.S. Annually $300 billion, they estimate. But you look at, they have numbers for Japan, Australia, China, Thailand, Europe. It ranges between 80 to 91% of disengagement. So this is happening all over the world. In fact, take a look at this. I think this is really interesting. Engagement and physical health. 62% of people who feel engaged at work feel that their work has a positive impact on their physical health. But look at people who are disengaged. Almost, 74% feel that by not being engaged at work, it has a negative impact on their health. So here we've got businesses who are trying to implement all these wellness programs and encourage their employees, you know, to go to the gym and work out. Why don't they just engage their employees? That might actually have an effect on physical health.
I just feel obliged to point out that Ricardo Semler almost killed himself by having to engage.
Well, he was engaged in a micromanaging, command and control way. So that's a great point. There has to be, there's sort of an art to the level of engagement. Yeah, yeah. And if it's a, yeah, exactly, the type of engagement is very important. And let's look at the psychological piece of this. Again, workers who feel like they matter, they have a voice, who are engaged, feel that there's a 78% impact positively on their psychological well-being, whereas over 70% feel if they're not engaged that you know affects their mental health, understandably. So just imagine what impact full engagement in the right kind of way could have on the health of businesses and the health of their employees. Bottom line impact, huge. What organizational democracy does, as we saw in the case of SEMCO, is it increases productivity, it increases retention, ability to attract and retain top talent, it decreases absenteeism, it increases innovation, market share. Companies that operate using organizational democracy find that it is a key to their competitive advantage. The last reason why I think we should care about why organizational democracy is important is the power it has to change the world. And I hope this is not too positive for David. He's like, don't be too positive. But what is interesting to me is I had sort of anecdotally found that companies that operate democratically can have an impact on their community. But Gretchen Spreitzer at the University of Michigan, she's a business school professor there, she actually did research, and they found quantitatively that companies that operate democratically have a positive ripple effect on their communities. And they found that this actually decreases the level of corruption and increases the level of peace and stability in nations around the world. And I just think that's amazing. I mean, you have a work environment where people go, they're excited, they feel that they matter. That's bound, you know, they go home from work, you're happy. You're not kicking the dog, you know, and you're happy, you're engaged, and that ripples out to affect, you know, your level of engagement within the community. And conversely, if your company is run in a way that's toxic and stifling, that can have a very negative effect on the community as a whole. So our goal with World Blue is we want to help build 1,000 democratic companies by 2020 in order to help make the world a more peace-loving place. So the three reasons to care: context, cash, and change. And to wrap up, 10 ways to know you're ready for organizational democracy. Number 10, your car has a bumper sticker that says people and profits. Number 9, you don't think leadership is only for a chosen few. Number 8, you don't like to babysit at work. Number 7, you do like to be treated like an adult at work. Number 6, you believe power is an unlimited and renewable resource. Number 5, you get a certain buzz when you collaborate with others. Number 4, you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. Number 3, you live by the mantra, the answer to how is yes. Maybe some of you know this Peter Block, management guru. It's the title of his book, The Answer to How is Yes. Wonderful. Number 2, your favorite moment in Braveheart is when Mel Gibson shouts freedom. And the number one reason to know? The number one way to know that you're ready for organizational democracy is your favorite color is blue. So I really believe that organizational democracy is the future of work, and the work that the Berkman Center is doing, the work that World Blue is doing, and countless others around the world are really ushering in, I think, this new age.
You've been listening to Tracy Fenton of World Blue speaking at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society on June 13, 2006. To learn more about Tracy Fenton, visit her blog at World Blue at worldblu.com/blog. Audio Berkman is brought to you by the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School. For Audio Berkman, I'm Erica George. Thanks for listening.